top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
It began as an idyllic weekend outing. But something went wrong. Stranded, alone, or are they?
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 252, 1982's regional horror, Unhinged.
252, 1982, lots of twos. Regional horror. This is the first time I ever heard you say that word.
Yeah, apparently this is...
I love regional horror. Regional horror is some of the best
horror. I guess it depends which region. Isn't all horror regional horror?
Well, what is your definition of regional horror?
I guess if you go off the beaten path and film something in the not stereotypical places. So you always think... New York, yeah. California, Italy, Philippines, whatever, all these kinds of locales. So this would be, I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Pacific Northwest. So this is a very small, weird, interesting, wonderful discovery that I was poking about on YouTube.
The bowels of YouTube?
Oh, the bowels. You can't forget that one. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, the more precise effort to regional horror is just that, really. They're movies that are made away from... the meccas of film production, made independently. Usually it's a filmmaker's friends and family, and they just work on it, you know, not full time because they have other jobs. So they do it over the weekends, and you know, of course they're providing their own wardrobe, makeup, whatever. It's a small group of people doing something. I mean, American Movie, that documentary with that Mark Borshak character, he was making regional horror. Peter Jackson's first film was regional horror, Bad Taste.
You helped produce a regional horror yourself.
That is true, I did. Killer Rack, yes. Yeah. Things, one of my absolute favorite regional horrors, which I wrote a piece on off
Dread Central
way back when, about how it's the worst movie ever made, and the filmmakers actually took that piece and used it for promotional purposes.
That's so amazing.
Because they want to make a sequel up and running, so they're using my piece where I'm basically kind of ripping apart their movie, but in a very good-natured, gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
And
as we do here.
Yeah. Another example of amazing regional horror is Tales from the Quad Dead Zone. But anyway, yes, this is regional horror, and I had never heard of this film before you suggested it. Great movie. It's sleazy. It starts off with these orgasmic sounds. I'm like, what's going on here? Who is in flagranto della, whatever the heck that was.
Yeah, are you eavesdropping on a neighbor, perhaps? Like, is this really coming out of the film? Like,
but it's just a girl getting out of bed.
Yeah.
She's just not a morning person.
Yeah.
So her orgasmic sounds are just her trying to get rouse herself from her slumber. Yeah, not long after that, boom, in the shower.
In the buff.
And you know
you are in the early 80s. This is just so perfect, so on point, so era-specific. When you got the buff, right at
buff the stuff,
the stuff,
Buff Bagwell from WCW.
When you got the thoroughly unnecessary protracted shower,
some argue necessary
protracted shower scene, so wonderful, and she's got obviously the perky boobs, and this is someone. I mean, this is not setting anything up. This is just pure nudity for nudity's sake. This is not anyone, any subnormal perv gazing at her in the bushes or in the shower. This is just perky, pert nipples for your viewing pleasure.
And later on, the scene God is reprised with yet another participant. So it's now a shower duo, and both are...
They're all together.
Their birthday suit, their whatever.
This is wonderful setup. You've got people going to a concert. They could have been
a festival.
Yeah,
a jazz
festivus
festival.
For the rest of us.
Yeah.
Was it a jazz festival?
Seriously,
that is so absurd.
Not once in the movie do they ever reference jazz. Listen to jazz. They talk about rock. They listen
wow.
to blues on the way. Blues rock on the way down. Mm-hmm. No jazz.
Oh, I did not know that. That
yeah.
is excellent. Okay.
Wait, this movie has a killer soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
This movie has an awesome soundtrack.
Oh, beautiful. And almost Italian-esque.
Yes, I was yeah. gonna say, and with regional horror again, it's just the filmmaker's friends that are. Everybody's just pitching in and. Whomever composed the soundtrack, kudos, because this thing was amazing. But anyhow.
Oh, yeah. So these three girls, you got Gloria, Terry, and Nancy, and they're college co-eds, and they're going out for this.
Gloria.
This, Gloria. Or you could go G-L-O-R-I-A, Gloria.
That too.
Yeah.
Now, do you prefer the Umberto Tozzi version or the Will Brannigan version of Gloria?
Oh, my God. Umberto Tozzi, of course. I'm a good WAP here. Like a shout-out to our buddy Dario in Ottawa, who out guineas me at every turn. Yeah, he's always leaving comments. And yeah, that guy is full-on. Like, he's Sopranos worthy guinea.
Soon enough, it'll be time for Dominic the Christmas Donkey.
Oh, Dominic the Christmas Donkey. Oh, my Lord.
Hey, jingity-jing. It's Dominic the Donkey. Jingity-jing. The Italian Christmas Donkey. La, la, la.
But
yeah, anyway.
These girls, and they're going on a road trip, and they're telling body jokes, you know, the punchline for which is shouldn't talk with your mouth full, and you can all guess how salacious that is. And so they're all like, you're telegraphing the fact that they're partying girls and they're having fun. And this is the classic movie, horror movie conceit. The dispatch on the radio.
This coming to me, man. Like lately, you're just jumping on what did I learn?
Oh my god!
Oh my god!
Sorry for treading upon.
It's okay. There's a lot more, but yeah, continue.
There's like the Stonehenge monument and fear of it being trod upon by dwarves. Treading upon what you've learned.
Yeah,
oh
because
my god.
Because I'm gonna, you know, I remember like one of the things you always talked about, like one of the horriest methods of exposition in cinema is a spinning newspaper headline. And yes,
that's the classic.
That
yeah.
reminds number one, but the second one is the radio exposition, the ambient
yeah.
background radio exposition.
Oh, I love it.
About some escape somebody doing something nefarious, you know?
Two girls yeah. are missing and they're an escaped lunatic is about, which is weird because that really has nothing to do with the rest of the movie. Like, not
really.
In any obvious linear fashion. So they're driving along, it's a bright, sunny day, they're out for the weekend, and then all of a sudden this gothic, torrential downpour occurs, and their car goes spinning out of control.
Is that what happened? It literally came to a slow rolling stop in a ditch, okay? Yes, they might have lost control, but I mean, there is no explanation for what happens in the next scene. They wake up convalescing in a stranger's home in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, and they're being tended to by this couple,
mm-hmm.
and
but not a couple like it's a daughter, a mother and a daughter.
Mm-hmm.
The daughter's name is was it Anne? It wasn't Anne. Marianne.
Marianne. Yeah,
and the mother. Wow, I mean
the matriarch of this family, Edith, and their assistant, who's like a contractor. He's like a
was
his
like
Carl. His name is
Norm.
Oh, okay,
Norman.
Yeah,
he
looks
Carl
a little bit
later.
Like Burton Cummings from The Guess Who.
Kinda
he's
does,
got this ridiculous
does.
Like florid fat face.
But it's funny because when we see Marianne, I mean, she just looks like, you know, your typical uptight spinster and so on. And you know, if you keep talking about mother and this with the same like tone as like Anthony Perkins did.
Oh
like,
yeah, I caught,
Psycho.
I caught
yeah.
that as well.
So, you know, mother, she's somebody that, you know, we have to fear and we have to, you know, pussyfoot around and tip around because mother doesn't like this or mother doesn't like that. And then when we do meet mother, at, of course, a dinner party scene, or at least a dinner scene, whenever you have these hardened battle axes in these movies...
they always look like Barbara Bush.
They always look like Barbara Bush in a wheelchair. And they're always in a wheelchair. So here we have another... Sheila Keith inspired Barbara Bush.
Like a kind of a Mrs. Doubtfire as well.
Barbara Bush esque old battle axe in a wheelchair who is so mean, so crotchety. Oh my God.
Yeah, and not to the guests who've just like.
But to her poor daughter.
Yeah, yeah, who've just like almost James Dean, Albert Camus themselves on the road, which I thought was hilarious too. If they're in such a serious accident, they're up and about and walking pretty quickly, and they're able to go downstairs for dinner and meet up with the matriarch.
This seemingly non-existent storm is raging on. So you don't really hear it anymore, but you know the roads are out and all phone service is knocked out.
Oh yeah, phone service. Well, I don't even know if they even had a phone. So again, they're convalescing, and really their injuries are so minor
and it's
really that they just leave immediately. Yeah,
except one is taking a little longer to convalesce than the others, but the other two, you know.
Oh, and this matriarch says. This Mrs. Doubtfire always chastising and castigating the daughter, Marion, saying, "Yo, you are coming here bringing men to the house." And this is a sprawling estate in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. Bringing men over. And
when you first meet Marianne, I mean, she has the appearance of that typical wound up super tight spinster bitch that's going to go crazy and so on. And
she almost looked like a little bit like Virginia Woolf. Like, it was a little bit odd. Like she's
a little bit like olive oily.
Yeah.
So you kind of think to yourself, like, this is going
to
be the villain.
Always when I'm ready to raise the tenor of the show, you like drag it down to earth I'm getting too pretentious.
That's
thank you so much.
Right there, there. So you think she's going to be the villain, but really, because Mother is the true villain,
Mother.
She becomes a very sympathetic character. For the most part. And then one of my favorite scenes is, like you said, she's kind enough to the girls, although she's a little, you know, she doesn't really like the youth of today, so to speak. But yeah, so poor Marianne is preparing dinner, and she's, you know, it's taking her a minute or two, and Mother yells out, oh, it's so perfect when she goes, "Marianne, these girls are under the impression they were dining this evening." Like, you know, it's so gripping with malice and sarcasm. Love it.
Oh, just seething with contempt. Yes. And her banter with the girls is also wonderful. Because, she's pretty haughty and pretty tough-nosed with her daughter. But when it comes to the girls, she treats them, it's almost like the Howell family from Gilligan's Island. Is like, are you related to the Percy family of the steel...
And they make fun of her for that, too.
Yeah, later on. Yeah. Connected to the steel magnates in Pittsburgh or some pencil... I forget what it was. It's some weird thing in there, not that I know of. And then, again, as they're coming together and about to retire for the evening, they're like, what is it with this old bag? And like, well, why does she talk like that? And that was very funny and very on point.
Yeah.
And they're starting to get suspicious that their caretakers are not what they seem. And so this goodwill toward them is maybe misplaced, and that there's maybe something else afoot. And sure enough, is there ever something else afoot as dusk moves to night? And oh my God, this is what put this into, I think, video nasty territory, because I didn't want to say anything to you or text you anything about the details of this movie. And when you get this 42nd Street raincoat wearing, like... heavy breathing, like, you know, the sound of one hand clapping.
As Chris
is like, whoa,
making,
I'm miming it
very,
for our...
very obscene gesture at this moment.
Perfect for the audio medium.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that blew my mind. That was pretty crazy. And then they find a tooth under the bed. So
and the eyeballs, just that shot. That was full fiasco.
Was wonderful. So you get automatically you're taken out of they lead you down the garden path of this is going to be your typical escaped lunatic psycho on the loose movie a la John Carpenter's Halloween or whatever. Numerous movies with escaped lunatic, of which that's the most prominent, but my God.
Well,
like, there's not an escaped lunatic. It's someone in the house who's a heavy breather who is spying on them.
Yeah, I mean, we can't really get too deep into like the relations and so on of who this person is, because we don't want to spoil much, and there's a lot of neat little twists and turns all the time with Marianne saying, okay, I'll tell you this more. I'll tell you the truth. Okay, fine, I'll admit it. So she keeps on telling and telling, revealing more and more and more. But another thing that should be mentioned is that the mother has, abhors all men, absolute. If she's not a bad enough mother to poor Marianne, she even is known to say the burden of parenthood is terminal.
Yeah.
That's a pretty nasty line.
And she even calls her a slut, I believe, too. Like, this is a nasty, nasty mama issues.
And yeah, I mean, things definitely become like, you know, the suspicions start to arise that things aren't right, and then somebody goes missing, and what put this film on the video nasty list was a scene near the end where a certain character falls into a certain room, and the fact that it was filmed in slow-mo just made it so much more disturbing as far as the BBFC was concerned.
Oh, yeah.
That they demanded cuts and da-da-da. And even when the film was finally declassified and released, they had to speed it up. So, yeah.
Aha, uh-huh. Did not know that. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But, Chris, this is another one of those movies where I need to ask you a question or two. Uh-huh. The ending, I kind of get it, but I don't get it. And you're just looking at me because I know you can't say much.
Let's just put it this way. We're so accustomed in horror to dealing with movies that are either overtly or more subtly, let's say, broadly speaking, misogynistic. So this one ups the misandry angle, mm-hmm. which is really unique and interesting. And so this Edith, the matriarch, is going hissing about the male influence. And this will come to the fore in the denouement, which we're trying our best to not to spoil, but
speak around it. Yeah.
There's the male characters are always not what they seem.
That's true.
And that if we're being intentionally oblique or ambiguous, like, but the daughter character comes into play when her identity is somewhat. There's an amazing, amazing twist that makes the rest of it, I mean, even more worthwhile. Yeah. Because this has so much to commend it. I mean, they're working, I think, on $100,000. This is Oregon. It always bugs me when people mispronounce that. Like, it's not Oregon, it's Oregon. So it's that Pacific Northwest regional horror. It's infused with, as you said, wonderful soundtrack, particularly when one of the girls is trying to get to the town.
Yes, and very discordant, very like...
Oh, yeah. Ooh. And...
It almost sounds like John Cale or some like avant-garde composer put it together. You know?
Oh,
I mean?
Even better. I was just gonna like name drop all the usual Riz Ortolini, who does every Italian gore soundtrack ever.
But Brian Eno, or I don't know, like something like
it was very, very like disquieting, and they kept making reference to the fact that the terrain is so rugged, even though we see no indication of this whatsoever.
No
because
ruggedness whatsoever.
It was just a house that they filmed it at, and you don't know where this house is. So, for all we know, it maybe isn't. So, there and the directions to the town, and of course, the phone is not working, and the girls want to call their mother. So, one of them, I believe Norman says, "Oh, you go between the trees, and then you walk there, and then you go to the highway, go down." It seems rather convoluted to get to the town, but as I believe Gloria is making her way through the underbrush, that music is. Incredible, but there's also a certain cheesiness. So the scene cuts they have this incredibly like Edgar Allan Poe kind of gothic thunder and lightning in between, even though and that consistently goes through the night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, as we're discussing this movie, and we are trying to avoid any spoilers, because really this is a film that does have a few well-earned twists. For the second week in a row, I've actually written down things I've learned. Right. And this sort of feels like a good point for me to segue into what did I learn, because I want to mention, I mean, one of the things was, you know, I want to talk about the radio exposition, but you brought that up. Now, a couple of things before I get into something, okay? First of all, what did I learn? This film totally passes the Bechdel test all over the place with flying colors. So
no
that's
kidding.
Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, this is one of the first instances, if not the first instance, of... shit in movie history. In one of the very first
that's
scenes.
Not Rudy Ray Moore or some blaxploitation thing. Yeah,
I guess maybe in the more Caucasian world. Yeah. Yes. But everything from what you've heard from us thus far, you probably think this like it's nothing but credits, right? No debits. And I mean, this film is got many credits, but again, this is part and parcel of regional horror because these are amateurs, right? There's a lot of debits, and honestly, this film, if I'm going to say, this is another thing I learned, it has more padding than like a kid's boxing glove.
Yeah, like, exactly.
This is one of the most padded movies driving padding.
Yeah, it needs a sleep number on the mattress.
Oh,
it's
my
so padded.
Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
It goes on and on and on, and then the dinner, eating in silence padding for a while. We got a piano recital padding. We're just listening
oh,
to
oh, my God, yeah. And this is a lean, playing. Like, 79-minute movie, and it's got, like, some... entire like Franz Liszt composition like tinkling away of the ivories as the girls sit on the carpet. Is it Marion who's tinkling the ivories? I believe. And the girls are sitting there playing cards, and this thing is going on for at least 7 minutes.
We got conversation padding where they're just sitting there on the bed. The camera's so static. There's no coverage whatsoever.
Oh,
it's just a two shot of them delivering flat lines of exposition back and forth.
So when do you think Nancy is going to start feeling better? I don't know. Well, how about someone go talk to Nancy? As if she was convalescing in an entirely different room, as if she was like unconscious.
There's sleeping padding. There's shots of them actually sleeping. There's repeated staring back and forth with suspicion padding.
Oh, I love that. This had a lot of the trappings of, I would say, Hammer horror in a way. Like, you got the ridiculous gothic lightning. You got the obscene, oversized...
It's got the trappings without the trappings. Because they infer that it's there. Or sorry, they imply that it's there. And they're supposed to infer that. We don't see it. This is very much a tell, do not show sort of movie.
Oh, yeah. And I love the the oversized candelabra that are dwarfing the dining room table. These things are like, 5 feet high. And the characters like dwarfed in comparison.
Frankly,
that's wonderful.
Anytime you have an unbalanced matriarch in a horror flick, you're always in for a good time.
Oh yeah, I just love it. She's so fantastic.
Yeah,
just
the name of this actress? She was just
no idea. This is a bunch of nobodies, but that's fine. Some of the performances may be a little bit sleepy, but I don't know what this movie was really trying to do, because they're trying to set up a rural-urban divide by having the kids from the big city go to get lost in the woods. But there's no...
I don't think that was the main conflict per se. I think it was more like morality play, because, again, with this abhorrence of the male species, of course, there's a backstory behind which we're not getting into at all. And then when mother sees... Of course, she's accusing her daughter of being... a woman of wanton morals, right?
Yeah.
Which is completely untrue, right? But
what, wanton soup?
Wanton. And then the girls, because of their youth, they represent promiscuity. And they're going up to a rock concert where, you can...
Yeah, licentious, whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's really about... And it's funny because this movie has a lot of allusions to Psycho. A lot of allusions. A little bit of Texas Chainsaw Massacre here and there.
A little bit. That's what I thought was odd, because like the antagonist in the first kill, there is a scythe that's used almost like Children of the Corn. Mm. But this is not a rural-urban divide. That's what I thought. It was really odd.
There's no cornfield to speak of. Yeah.
Like, why a farm implement? Like, this, it's tonally very odd, but and yet very wonderful, because it's extremely smart. The dialogue is very sharp. It's very... self-knowing, but it's also, it doesn't know what it particularly wants to be, so it's caught between its smarts and its lows, because you have this protracted shower scene where the two of the I want to say Gloria and Terry are showering so close to one another that they could towel each other off. Like, their nipples are practically touching as this Fulci-esque figure is shrouded in darkness and leering and heavy breathing at them. And that was such an odd scene. It was really, it didn't fit the rest of the smarts from the movie that you would have salacious scene.
There was a nice veneer of sleaze throughout this
movie. And well said.
Anytime you could put a little patina of sleaze
on
anything,
I love it. Yeah.
I enjoy it. I always do. What did you learn?
I learned that I was doing a little bit of reading about this, and I want to say his name is Kevin Newman, who wrote the slasher movies, which is quite the
encyclopedia of slasher movies?
It's a tome people frequently turn to read up about film, particularly slasher. And he said, and I forget the term for this thing, I don't know if it's a clapperboard or something, where you demarcate scenes.
It's like
scene one cut, and then you use that. Apparently, and I didn't see it, I was looking for it, apparently that can be seen in the shadows in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is just so wonderful. But for all the movies that have been sent to us that are right around in the neighborhood of this ballpark of this budget, let's say, to 1 to 200,000 area, the amount of smart screenwriting savvy and actually visual savvy that went into this is really off the charts. So there's wonderful scenes involving like Escher-esque stairwells and staircases, and wonderful use of lighting, this ornate rooms with these like tall curtains
chiaroscuro,
yeah, whatever. This wonderful, like, grand piano.
How do you pronounce it? Say it again.
Chiaroscuro. Yeah.
Oh, Lord, that's too difficult for my
time. Yeah, the sprawling rooms with the grand pianos, like, it's so gothic, it's so Hammer-esque, mm-hmm. and they put a lot of effort. When you don't have money, might as well enhance the interior, because there's really little to no exterior shot. There's no exterior foreboding of any kind, despite their repeated warnings about, the terrain is so rugged, as if it's like Bear Grylls that you need to like just wander down the highway, like hilarious. Like the highway, anytime like there's a highway, you could probably hear the highway. It didn't seem like if it's a quarter of a mile away, like.
And frankly, I mean, we talk about the acting being a little wooden here and there, and that's mostly the girls, not the antagonists. They're fantastic, but in many ways, I prefer that when you just have amateurs and they're. And they look like real human beings, as opposed to these central castings, and you get this, like, I mean, this was in 82, but 10 years later, in 92, you're going to have freaking, like, Katie Holmes and somebody else, like, talking like, rejects from, like, some sort of dissertation, grad school, whatever.
Yeah,
it's
true, yeah.
Like, so I would rather have non-central casting type real characters.
Yeah, peripheral casting, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, you know?
Oh, and another wonderful padding, like this, oh my God. There's this really involved blather between Gloria and Norman, the Man Friday helper about the house, and they're standing outside, and she's pressing him about whether she thinks Edith is weird, and he says, oh, I don't know, I just do my job. Every week I get my paycheck, and I just go, and it went on and on and on. That's not a debit. I was just enjoying it. I was like grinning ear to ear. But again, no, they were just trying to shove as much into this like austere non-plot as they really could. They're really like people lost.
Yeah.
They're being taken care of in a house.
Yeah. They're trying to drag it, kicking and screaming to fit for a long time. But that's okay. You know what? Because I've seen a lot of movies where you could tell there's a lot of interminable, like, walk time and so on. Or as I call it in a lot of horror movies, explore time, looking around the basement. Where it just goes on and it's boring. But in this movie, it just adds to the off-kilter atmosphere of it all. So, yes, there's a lot of padding. But it's somehow advantageous to the film as opposed to disadvantageous. Mm-hmm. So, this is, the wonderful thing about this genre. It's honestly, dude, it's like a pail without a bottom. Like, you can never... Anybody that says, I've seen everything, I don't think there's anybody when it comes to this genre that can say, I've seen everything. And a lot of people love to say, oh, I've seen everything. There's so much out there, you know? And the more you think you've seen it all, somebody then suggests another one, like this movie. And I'm like, this is wicked. Where is this filming on my
and
life?
We have I would venture to say we have a particular affinity towards psychosexual, odd Freudian horror movies.
Yeah, like, it's fair to say.
And whether it be like with odd, even if it's Killer Dwarf or all these different types of like these more
Sinful Dwarf.
You're thinking
Killer Dwarf.
I'm thinking of the awful metal band. Yeah. But these sort of more quiet, talky, yet incredibly creepy, internal, interior type movies. I won't even throw Pin out there. These very claustrophobic, talky movies that gradually reveal themselves like a Russian doll. I think that's
Russian doll.
I love that kind of thing.
The ones that are layered like an onion. You just keep peeling away the different layers. And The Changeling, another good one.
Oh, another, fantastic.
A supernatural film that also has psychological elements as well.
Or your Burnt Offerings. These are the kind of movies we just thrive on these
Cronenberg,
types of movies.
Anything of Cronenberg's Golden Period.
So, star rating. I mean, my God.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously, like, this film has debits because of the circumstances of its creations. But objectively, this was a great film. Like, I really I enjoyed it. So I'm going to give this one a solid, and very, very appreciative 3.5 stars. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because it's not quite, I can't give it 4 stars, but like, this is a scrappy little film that could, and it did it well. So I'm giving it 3 stars, and I'm very proud to do so. Maybe a repeat viewing might even bump it up. You never know.
Oh, yeah, and you have like a couple red herrings, which I really appreciate, and constantly revelatory with who could be the antagonist. They're going to waver back and forth between who you think it is and who is going to come to the forefront to be the more prominent. There's not really a final girl to speak of. Mm-hmm. There's just so many machinations, so many moving parts in a film that is just okay, you run your car off the road, you get rescued, and whatever. Yeah, and someone puts a cold compress to your head and says, there, and get better. But you think that they're going to be trapped, let's say literally trapped, and let's say tethered or roped off to the bed a la Stephen King's Misery. There's no
free reign.
And that just speaks to its unpredictability.
And
they are free to come and go. They really are. Yeah. Like, okay, the highway's over there, the town's over there, to your own peril. It's rugged terrain, but go. And I understand you have to call your mother. Like, that is great. It's not like they're trying to thwart them at every turn. Yeah. Well, what a cool thing.
And the other thing too, it's even more impressive than 82. I mean, if ever there was a year where a lot of horror movies were formulaic or trying to fit itself into a template. Because this is pre Nightmare on Elm Street, but post Halloween and Friday. So yeah.
Oh, this is the era of Slumber Party Massacre, Sorority House Massacre, House in Sorority Row, all that kind of thing, where it's the wonderful, wonderful hospital massacre, where they really telegraph things off from the get-go and maybe throw in one red herring, but you know from the get-go. So well done to the principals behind this. And we don't have, you could look it up on Wikipedia, we don't have it right in our notes here, but kudos to whoever was behind this. This is wonderful. So 3.5 for me, likewise. Okay. 3.75. This is a gem. I saw when I was Googling that there was a 2017 version. I confess, I don't know if that was a remake.
Because I was saying oftentimes when they use these like adjectives or titles, they're so generic that it could just be, you know, they often recycle them again for other movies.
Oh, yeah. And it was only a matter of time before another unmovie came down the pike, like The Unnameable or whatever. It's
Unseen.
Unseen, the un. This is so awesome. I would love it if Severin would Blu-ray this baby and put out lessen some of its more egregious, regional horror sort of failings, where you have some of the lighting issues and they could have maybe some of that sped up bit where maybe sort of make it more cohesive. But I would love and would gladly pay for a Blu-ray edition of this movie. This is a wonderful, wonderful film. And hopefully you enjoyed our discussion, and feel free to reach out and send us your favorite regional horror films.
Regional horrors, man. I mean, that's, again, like, it's a bottomless trove of goodness. There was a book, I wish I could shout out right now, but there was a couple guys that put out a book a couple years ago. It was, like, considered to be the definitive encyclopedia of regional horror. I need to get my hands on that thing. The only problem is I don't want to get my hands on that movie. Then it's going to take me down a wormhole of, now I got to find this movie and this movie and this movie.
Oh, yeah. Just like what happened with the cannibal genre. You went on a cannibal binge for a little while there, and you really, I think, satiated yourself almost probably in perpetuity for the genre, right? I don't know.
Well, I watched a couple movies, I'd say about 3 weeks ago, Eaten Alive and The Man with the Last Cannibals, and they were just, it's like the thrill is gone. You know what I mean? Like, and I hate to say it because, I mean, you know, animal cruelty is always part and parcel of all these movies, right? But when you see one disembowelment of a poor defenseless creature, you've seen them all, man. And like, oh man, like, these movies are just, I don't know, I don't feel bad at all for the human beings. I don't.
Yeah.
You know? As they're being put through some of the most horrific, torturous devices ever. But the animals, I just, I also went on this crazy German horror where I was like, all the films of Jörg Buttergeit, you know what I mean? And that was like some real extreme shit, you know what I mean? So I do go through phases, definitely. I can't really say what phase I'm in now because I'm sort of like, whatever film we're watching for the podcast is the one I'm watching.
Yeah, well, it's almost behooves us to track down another psychosexual 80s movie. So it's almost like we should put a call out there. Put maybe a message out on Twitter or like on Instagram, like send us something that we really like. We sunk our teeth into the wonderful pin and this type of movie. It's like, this is our bailiwick. This is our bag. Yeah. Like, I love this stuff.
Well, I got another little challenge right now for our listeners. If you think that there is a film out there that is undiscussable, suggest it. And let's see if we can discuss it.
Wow. That's Cronenberg. It's Cronenberg-esque because he's, read a wonderful essay by the novelist Martin Amis. He was talking about his buddy J.G. Ballard, who wrote Crash and High Rise.
Martin Amis, right?
Yes. He was talking about, like, the unfilmable novels that Cronenberg always.
Well, that's what films. I mean. You keep like, hearing about, oh, this is unfilmable, this is unfilmable. Well, maybe there's a certain movie that is undiscussable because it's so avant-garde and out there and blah, blah, blah. I think I'm up for that challenge. I am up for it, man. Like,
that would be absolutely fantastic.
And it doesn't have to be a horror. It could even be a documentary. It could be whatever. Just
sure.
The loonier, the better. Let's do it, man. Let's.
That'd be great. Send us your suggestions. Reallyawfulmovies@gmail.com. We got a bunch of exciting, out of left field episodes coming up that you're going to want to stay tuned to. So tell all your friends. If you like what you're hearing, throw a review up on iTunes. We really appreciate it. It really helps people discover the show.
You always say iTunes, but the reality is I think most people use various podcatcher devices. Okay. On their, you know, there's so many different ones you can now download and put on your smartphone. Mm-hmm. I don't think very many people actually download off iTunes. So whatever
Stitcher, whatever,
wherever you find this podcast, there's always going to be a place for you to put a comment. So if you want to comment about a specific episode, we'd love that. If you want to comment about the podcast in general, we would love that as well. We want more interaction with our listeners, more feedback back and forth. We have some, we want more.
Yeah, so that would be fantastic. And new episodes as always Friday. We're the hardest working men not in show business, thanks James Brown. But yeah, we keep plugging away, and we're like, we feel like we've really found our stride, and 252 episodes in, we can't wait to count down to 500. Yeah, because we're just having the best time and just enjoying what we're doing. There's so many genres to cover. Yeah. We've only done two women in prison films. So
I know, and you put it in the intro too. Every time I listen to it, because yes, I do listen to my own show, and every time I listen to an episode of one of our shows, I always think, man, it's right there in the bumper, and yet we've barely scratched the surface of women of WIP. So yeah.
Oh yeah, and more of that's going to come. We're going to be doing some interesting interviews with some people coming up that you're going to want to look forward to. We're going to do something interesting from one of our favorite local taverns that's coming up. We're not going to let you know what film that's going to be. You're going to have to figure that one out for yourself. So we're going to go out into the world and do a on scene.
And I will say right now, our holiday episode, the one that we will upload closest to Christmas, is going to be a doozy.
Yeah, forget your Die Hards, forget your Black Christmas, forget your Silent Night, Deadly Night, forget your Silent Night, Bloody Night,
Gremlins. Forget them, they're all great, but...
But we are going to, we have something that...
We've unearthed something that, yeah.
You're going to want to see. So, keep listening, and we will talk to you soon.
Take care. Thank you.